welcome to Malkier Talks, a Wheel of Time Theory podcast. I am Rob, your host, and before I introduce my guest, I have a couple of quick announcements. So firstly, I would love to announce a special episode releasing this weekend, that is if you're listening on release day, and that is a bonus speculation podcast episode I did with the wonderful Geeky Eerie, where we speculate on the idea that One on Prime is following that marriage idea of something old, something new, something borrowed, and something blue. And we speculate on what something blue might be. So that comes out on March 7th, and I would love if you could check that out. I would like to announce also my monthly live stream that I do on my YouTube channel. This month I'm doing what's called the Wheel of Azures. I have 7 wonderful guests with me representing all of the Azures in the White Tower. Many people, Lesbian Nerdy, Delusions of Grendel, Tree, Shelley's back, so many people to name. It's going to be a lot of fun, so please come and join us on Saturday the 13th of March at 8 p.m. Eastern over on my YouTube channel to watch that, where I may or may not be wrapping my parody live. Oh dear, what have I signed myself up for? But if you're also just a podcast listener, and you're like, YouTube is not my sort of thing, I have my monthly live recording in Discord scheduled this month. And joining me for that is the wonderful innkeeper of the Dusty Wheel himself, Matt Hatch. We're waiting on one more guest to confirm. And we haven't quite decided on what loony theory we might try and have a banter about, but I know it's going to be fun no matter what we pick. So please come and join us. That will be recorded live in the Discord, my Discord channel, on the 21st of March, that is a Sunday, at 4 p.m. Eastern. Yes, the innkeeper is taking a day off from running the inn to come and hang out with me in my Discord server and just talk some shit about some Wheel of Time and get a bit crazy and wacky. So I would love for you to join us. So that if you need the link to my Discord server, it's in the description to the show notes, or alternatively, just find a way to contact me and I will send you a link so you can be in and listen to us gabble on for an hour and a half, and there will be a post show where hopefully the innkeeper has a little bit of time to hang out and say howdy along with my other guests. Hopefully they will confirm soon, but I know if they can't confirm, we will have someone amazing to join them. But enough of all that, let's get on to today's show. And today I have the wonderful pleasure of introducing the amazing Carolina. How are we doing, Carolina?
I am doing so well. Thank you for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm glad you're doing well on this wonderful Friday dark evening for both of us.
This is
a rare event here on the podcast. I've actually got someone who is in the same country as me appearing on the podcast that isn't my first time reader. It's amazing.
You know what? Yeah, that's a big deal for me as well, because I'm always, you know, staying up for the Dusty Wheel and Leafcast and all these other things. So I'm happy to be a regular time.
Nice, pleasant sort of 6:30 in the evening. It's very chilled. I like this.
Yeah,
it's about 3 in the morning.
Yeah, that's become a real time for me, 3 a.m. When my hobbies take place.
Yes, I can absolutely agree with you there. So before we dive into, I've got a patron to welcome and we tell everyone what the topic is. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, so they can have a little bit of insight to who I've invited on today.
Yeah, I mean, I think we know each other from Discord, and probably that the fundraiser we did a little while back. So I guess on Wheel of Time things, I'm more artist known, which is interesting because I don't think in the rest of my life I'm really known for that sort of thing. I do things for people that need like a random landscape occasionally, but that's for film sets, which kind of brings me into what I am. I'm a filmmaker. I do almost every type of aspect of filming, from editing to sound recording to directing to the writing. And I rarely get paid for any of that, and it's great. But the Wheel of Time related stuff, I actually am kind of a new reader in a sense. I read the books kind of in an all-out dash when the lockdown started in England, so at the end of March. And I read for like straight all 14 books, 15 total, I guess, actually. But I read them in a month. So that was...
Whoa. A month?
Yeah. You could say I had a lot of time on my hands. It's maybe one of the best months of my life, I'll be honest with you.
I mean, you're reading like a book every two. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that'd be like, yeah, I read a book every two. I read a book in an afternoon. What are you talking about, Rob? You know, but that's like two book. That's like a book every 2 days. And these are not small books. I'm mighty impressed.
Well, half of the people are impressed and the other half are kind of split into two. One half is Wheel of Time people that think I should have savored it more. And then the other half are my relatives and family that think that I could have spent my time a lot better. And they would be right. I don't think they're right, but I know that they're right. So there's that.
No, it was lockdown. It was a very weird time. All right. The weather wasn't too bad. It's not like lockdown now where the weather is shit. I mean, is it snowing a lot down? So you're down south, aren't you, Caroline? You're in...
I'm in London right now. Oh, you mean my actual... Yeah, I was in London when this happened. I was alone in my apartment. My roommates had kind of similar to right now, actually. It's kind of a weird parallel. But my roommates were both back. I went back to India right before lockdown. And so I was just in London and it was in April. And April was just actually very nice. So I'd bring my chair out at like 9 a.m. I'd have my yogurt, put my music on, and I'd read a book, and then the sun would set around 8 or 9, and then I'd go back inside and I'd read till 1. I like, people think I read really fast, but like, if you do read for almost 10 hours a day, you don't have to read that fast to get it done.
That is true. I mean, I read typically somewhere in the region of 100 pages an hour, maybe 70 or 80 pages an hour, if it's like really heavy, heavy reading. I mean, if it's something I've read a few times before, I read a lot faster than that, obviously, because I just skim. But yeah, I mean, 10 hours, that's 1,000 pages. So yeah, I can absolutely see how you've managed to achieve that. But I have to say, going out first thing in the morning, sitting in the sun, nice comfy chair, good book, relaxing, and then coming in when the sun sets late at night. I mean, that sounds like a pretty nice April.
It was amazing. I feel bad saying that because, you know, this has been a really majority bad time, I'll say. COVID has not been fun for most, and definitely not for me either. But that month was a highlight of the COVID times, and actually of all time.
It's important in shitty times to find nice moments. And even if that is just, well, it gave me a month to sit on the couch or on the nice chair in the sun and read some good books. I mean, that's, you know, that's something nice that you've managed to find in some shitty times. So
exactly.
Awesome. Well, now I have one question before we move on to the other bits and pieces. Have you read it again since?
I am on my first reread right now. I'm on the Dragon Reborn. I'm taking it much slower right now because I'm also reading Brandon Sanderson stuff right now. I'm on the last book of the Mistborn trilogy.
Ah, that's a brilliant book.
Series. Yeah, really enjoy it.
Yeah, I love that. Oh, brilliant. Well, this is good stuff. But that's a wonderful month. April's my birthday, and if I could have spent April just reading like that, I think I would have been amazing. In fact, I probably should have. I didn't do much else in April last year, but, you know, c'est la vie.
Some other fun stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I started things like this, so, you know, I discovered the Dusty Wheel, and it dragged me into this wonderful, crazy Discord-based place. So,
that was the best part about this as well, is that I finished the books and I had this huge book hole, and then there was just so much in the Wheel of Time community to look forward to. It was like amazing when I walked into that world and Tree welcomed me in, and I was like, okay, let's do this thing.
This is great. I love it. It's such a welcoming community. It's something I very much treasure. So speaking of things I treasure, oh, what a nice segue there. I do have a shout out for a new patron before we get diving into our topic today. And I would like to say welcome to a new Seven Towers Guardian. And that person is Leaf Brother Dan. So Leaf Brother Dan has joined my Patreon family. He has some wonderful access to some secret places of my Discord server. mostly so, you know, he can get advanced ideas and suggest things and discuss things with me. That's what that benefit entails. But yeah, it's great to have you here, Dan. So thank you so much. This is your shout out. And yeah, hopefully it won't be the only one I eventually do. Well, I've done others, but, you know, that I get to do more, hopefully speaking, because I love my Patreon family. They're so kind. But yeah, so what we're talking today about a very interesting character in the Wheel of Time, and that is Catswain.
That's your way of saying, am I allowed to curse on this?
Of course you're allowed to curse on this.
That's your way of saying the bitchiest character. Very, very interesting character, Catswain. I told you that I wrote on the Great Blight, I wrote her like a bio or something, and
Yes.
I snuck in at the end because I did a really thorough job. I'm going to be honest. I did a way more thorough job than I expected to.
I tried to read the article.
It's too long.
And I was like, I got down. Let me bring it up because it's on my phone so I can bring it up without destroying anything. So I got up to Knife of Dreams. And I was like, my God, have I really I've read so much and I'm only on Knife of Dreams?
It feels like you're reading the books again.
Yeah. It's brilliant. I love the detail. So I'm now scrolling to the bottom for this bitchy note.
Yeah, I wrote somewhere in there like a little cute. I said she's a catty cat swain somewhere, and I mentioned to Nablus, who was doing the edit for this, that I know that this probably won't stay for the whole cut, but if you could keep it, it means a lot to me.
I've got that. Yes, right at the end, just before the legacy piece.
Nice.
Talking about her. Like hoop and needles and other bits and pieces like that. And you just literally, it finishes off with, she is a catty cat swain.
Which, like, nobody's ever, except for now, because I've mentioned it, nobody would have ever read that far along to find out this, which I think is probably why Nablus left it.
I'm going to, before this episode comes out, I'm going to contact Nablus and be like, hey, I've just read Carolina's post. And Catty Catswain, I mean, that's a fun, alliteration there. I love it. And I'm glad you put that in there. Glad you kept it in there. So, yeah.
Thank you. That would mean a lot to me. Now you'll draw attention to it and he'll be like, oh, dang, I meant to take that out.
I keep meaning to talk to. By the way, for anyone listening who's unaware, we're talking about the greatblight.com.
Oh, yes.
A website that Nablus set up. And it's got all sorts of things in there, like lots of information about content creators, YouTubers, podcasters. I keep meaning to update my information in there because it's wrong. But it's a great website. A lot of people use it. And it has a wiki. And a wiki that was actually built so that you can't spoil yourself. It runs in sort of like, just using the Cad Swain section here, it goes through with non-spoiler information at the beginning to start with, no matter where you are, and then goes book by book information. So if you're like, I've only read up to, The Gathering Store, Crossroads of Twilight and haven't read the last books, you can read that book's summary of the character. And not read any further, and you would not be spoiled. So it's got some great features in there. I do recommend.
Yeah, it's a huge deal as well, because like when I was reading the books, I remember wanting to look up something about Egwene, like what Aja she was going to be or something. I was spoiling it for myself, so in a way this is my own fault. But I wanted to I was trying to figure that out. And then I read, and it was in the first, this is a spoiler cat, like I could say this.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, I should probably say this in the pre-show. You can fucking swear and you can spoil the shit out of it as well, so.
I'm acting like I'm on like Jimmy Kimmel here. I'm like, can I say
This is not the Dusty, yeah. I mean, all right, the Dusty Bill does spoilers, but you can swear. This is not a first time reader show. There we go.
Okay, perfect. But I was trying to look up something about her that I wasn't supposed to know yet, but then it just, on the first front page, it told me that she was going to die.
Ah,
I was like, this is, I was so mad because I don't genuinely like spoilers, which the whole comment I just made kind of makes that seem not true.
Sometimes you're like, I don't mind, like knowing an Aja of a character is different to knowing they die.
Yeah.
That's a whole different set of spoilers there.
I think there was like some specific reason that I felt like it would help me understand something. I don't know. But I was just so upset about it. And that, like, there was barely anything else spoiled for me, but it was like, I've just had my roommate, Bali, she's just finished the series because I forced her to read it.
Nice.
Which, like, I really didn't think she would actually do that. Like, she came home, like, in June to my huge, like, stack of Wheel of Time books, and I was like, you will begin this now.
It's like the size of a small child if you stack it all on its side, isn't it? It's an impressive set of books.
Yeah, it's a toddler, honestly. Mm-hmm. But I made her read it, and she's, I was like, the things that she would guess, but sometimes she would look things up. And I told her so many times, I was like, do not look up anything because of this. And I'm so proud to say that though she had like small spoilers for herself, she did not know that Egwene was going to die. And that's all I can say for what I've done.
That's good. You've reminded me, and I'm going to continue the segue here for a moment because this is just so funny. So I was recording with Tracy and Amber, and I can't remember if they were on my podcast or I was on theirs because we were on each other's in a short space of time, but we were talking about Egwene, and I feel like she was on mine because
you have the whole segment about like writing her out of the books, don't you?
So that I do with Alex. I'm actually recording that in a couple of days. Alex and I are finishing off the Great Hunt. That was for Egwene lovers out there. That was purely that was done on the Twatcast charity stream last July. Yes, last July sounds about right. and we rolled dice to pick, you know, we just named characters like, you know, Rand, Matt, well, not Rand, but we were like Matt, Perrin, Egwene, mm-hmm. and Evelan, and Moraine. We assigned them all a number, rolled a big dice, and we pulled Egwene. And so then we stuck with it when we actually decided to make it a long-standing podcast series. We do an episode a month. So far, we've done half a book an episode. So even at that rate, it's going to be a good couple of years before we finish. And we're on the easy books at the beginning, like so when we get to later books. And she's, you know, Ammon and C, you're learning to dream in the waste. We're like, I don't think we're getting two episodes for that book. We might do three or four. So it's going to be a few years before we finish that. But it's good fun. But this was, so Tracy and Amber and I were talking during the podcast. And it just came up. So her husband's reading the books. And he's on, I don't know, Shadow Rising or something of that nature. Like, he's not very far along. And Tracy was just chatting away. He was not supposed to be around. And she was not supposed to be giving out spoilers or something because he was around. And then we were just chatting away. And she's like, oh, yeah, I know, because when Egwene died, and then all of a sudden in the background, all you heard was, Tracy! And her face, because they record on video, her face was just like, oh. And then she tried to make it better by saying, well, she doesn't die until the end. And he's like, that makes it worse.
That was the good thing about it. I didn't know when it was going to happen, so I always thought it was going to happen. Well, good enough.
I still tease her about that moment now. In fact, I Skype bombed them when they were recording with Black Tower Podcast a few weeks back. And we got talking about things. I was like, by the way, is your husband around? She's like, no, he's gone for today. I can spoil things.
Yeah, well, it's a huge one. Like, I feel like there's so many different spoilers you could give, but there's not, like, I mean, okay, that's not true. But I was about to say that not that many people die. A lot of people die. But like, there wasn't, like, as many people that would die as I thought there was going to be, because I had just come off, like, reading Game of Thrones and stuff. So it's not a great place to come from.
No, that's true. I mean, in terms of the I suppose you say big names, especially the original Emmonsfield Five and that. Well, you know, it is just the Egwene, isn't it? So
yeah, I really thought Lan was going to die. I thought Moraine was going to die again. which is crazy because I was, as we've just discussed, I was reading this over a month, but in that month I had so many theories, which is crazy for how quickly I was reading. I still was like, this is going to happen.
It's like watching a movie and you're like, oh, it's going to finish like this, isn't it? Yeah. They're a bad guy secretly, and you just carry on watching. Yeah, you've just, I'd love that's what that. You've done.
I love doing it with Hallmark movies. I used to do that with my grandmother all the time. It would bother her so much. Those movies are obviously incredibly easy to do them with, but she just thought I was an absolute genius. And I was like, grandmother, if you would just watch this once and really think about it, you would know.
But she's just there casually.
She's enjoying herself. Yeah, whereas she's enjoying herself. You know. So I have to figure something out. You're
analyzing, yeah. Love that. Okay.
I'm on a huge tangent here.
We're all about tangents, left turns, rabbit holes. What did another guest describe it as at one point? I can't remember what they described it as, but I'm all for tangents here on Malky Talks, and do not worry. But Catswain, let's try and talk a little bit about Catswain. Why not? You know. So this came up because of the wiki article you did for the Great Blight, and you're like, oh, I've got some thoughts about Catswain. I'm like, Catswain's a great character. She always gets people thinking and speculating. So I was like, I love this idea. And then I threw out a Google Doc and I was like, throw in what you're thinking. I'll read through your article, see what jumps out at me. If there's anything other than what I've already thought of, and we'll riff around a bit, shall we? So,
yeah, I mean, I did not expect myself to grow so passionate about an idea over like 30 minutes, but I did. And before I begin, because I, as you just said, we love a tangent. I want to just say this now. I like Catswain. It's just, I know that's controversial. That's a huge thing to say.
That's okay.
I respect Catswain. Catswain reminds me of so many, like, not just women, but mostly women, especially because I was an athlete for, like, since I was 5 until I graduated from UVA in rowing. And my major was not rowing, but it did feel like it sometimes.
There's a lot of work required in rowing, so I can understand
honestly,
that.
It was 20 hours of athletics, 20 hours of schoolwork, and which mm-hmm. one took more energy? Well, anyways, but I would often be like surrounded by women that would be like, there was always two different ways about going towards a goal. And there was always like these certain type of people, just like Kat Swain, that would be like really focused to the point that they'd almost put off other people that were focused in a different way, because they thought there was like a different way to approach the goal. Whereas this person, let's just consider them named Kat Swain on my team, would be like, I'm focused about it, but I'm not like kidding around. Whereas the rest of you like are still going to go out drinking too much. You guys are going to like prioritize other things. Whereas mm-hmm. like, Kat Swain just reminds me so much of like hardcore athletes that like take no prisoners. So when I read her, I like knew she was being a dick. Like I could feel that hard, like that severe lining of what she was doing. But I also like, had like a lot of respect for that, because when you are that person, nobody loves you. Nobody's caring for you. You have to be your own person. Like nobody's going to come and coddle you when everyone hates you and when Rand tells you that you're dead to him. Like nobody, like everyone's just going to continue to think, well, you're a bitch, so what do you expect? So, yeah. You know, I have that respect for Kat Swain before we get into this little theory.
That's a very valid analogy. I can absolutely... obviously not being a sportswoman myself, or really? Not being athletic at all myself, really, apart from, you know, some years spent on roller skates, so it doesn't not count.
Oh my God, I love that.
I used to live in London and I used to go roller skating so I lived at Euston. I lived at Euston. I was lucky enough that we're going on a big tangent now, ladies and gents, please enjoy the ride with us. So I worked for a pub company, called Mitchell's and Butler's, and I got a job at the Rocket, which is next to Euston Station, and it came with accommodation, which was based above. So I lived in literal central London for free.
Is it still open? I'm like going to be there in a minute.
The Rocket, probably is open. It's obviously not open now, currently, but it'll reopen eventually.
Roller skating place?
Oh no, it's not a roller skating place. Oh, no, dear. But I used to get on my roller skates from there and roller skate across towards. Not Hyde Park, one of the other parks I forget now. And then like drop down towards Hyde Park and go roller skating in Hyde Park. And a couple of times I would catch the roller skating group that would go around the city center on a Sunday and stuff like that. So because Sundays was my typical day off.
That's amazing.
So yeah, it's that. But yeah, going to the original point of Kat Swain being compared to an athletic, mm-hmm. Very very driven athletic woman. I was like, I can absolutely see that. You read articles about people like, you know, just, I mean, I'm into tennis. So I've watched a fair bit of tennis over years, and you see the Williams sisters and just like the laser focus they have, you know, they're not namby pamby. They're like, you know, this is a spade. I'm going to call it a spade. And, you know, if you can call it a fucking shovel or a brick or a, you know, toothpick, whatever you want, but it's a fucking spade. So, you know, I can totally see that analogy. And I think it fits Kat Swain really well.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't mean that I don't acknowledge that she's got so many issues, but like, I feel like they're well earned in a way. And at least I feel like she knows that they're issues. She's just like, this is what
she owns
got,
them. Absolutely.
Man.
Yeah. She absolutely owns them. Yeah.
Okay. So we get into this theory, you think? Should I just.
Yeah. So this is, So the bit on your top of your notes there, like, let's go into this wilder. I love this idea. Yeah. This is great fun. So.
Yeah, this is, I mean, the most, I have a lot of notes on it, but honestly, this research was not done very thoroughly as an English major. I just feel I need to say that now before anyone comes for me. I don't know who's going to come for me, but if someone comes for me, I know. I understand.
Nope, do not worry. I genuinely released an episode today with Aradia, who is known as Aradiapedia because she's like, you know, knows canon for days and master of the deck. And we did an hour and 20 minutes riffing off a simple slip of the tongue where someone tried to say Tamundred. It said Tamundred. And we were like, no. Oh, what if Tam was Demondred? What if Tam was evil? And we did this whole, like, almost hour and a half, like, live podcast. It was in the Discord server a few weeks ago, and I've now released it today because it's just how it fit in the order of things. Riffing about Tam being evil. And one of my guests is a literal expert on Wheel of Time. So, you know.
Okay, so it's fine.
We can fudge the edges. We can wave canon a little bit. You know, we can blur it around. Do not worry.
Perfect. Okay, well, with that in mind, if anyone who knows this, who has read the white book, because I think that might be the only place where her name is mentioned, which might be the first thing I said that's incorrect, but I'm going to go with it anyways. The wilder that taught Kat Swain the lesson that that kind of formed her into not into being who she is. Her name was Norla. I think that's how we're going to pronounce it, right?
And, I'm okay with that, yeah.
Yeah. And we don't have much information about her, but not that, like, I kind of feel like when it comes to, I originally had written it that I thought that we knew less about her than Nakomi, but I actually think though we meet Nakomi, Nakomi's interaction is so sparse when it comes to actual information, which is why we love to rant about it. Mm-hmm. Whereas Norla in the book, I do think, though we don't know much about Norla herself, we know more about what she did. So that,
yeah.
I think it's almost even in the sense of like appearance versus information. So I'm going to go with that.
Cool.
So my theory is that Norla is Nakomi, and I'm right. So that's
I love it. You did end your notes like that. So yeah, Norla is Nakomi. I fought this on a whim, but now I'm prepared to fight it to the death. I love that.
Yeah. Which, with the caveat that if I'm wrong, dang. But you know, I've got a few points and we could argue them, but let's hear them out. Okay, my first thing is that Cad Swain was taught a lesson that gave her like a ability to then teach that lesson to others, which doesn't mean that Norla's Nakomi, but it does mean at this point in time that she's setting up Cad Swain to really, sort out events in the future when it comes to the Dragon Reborn and also a lot of other characters. So in that respect, I feel like she's guiding Cad Swain in the similar way that Nakomi guided Avienda, which is also, this part's probably like where you might kind of start to disagree because it depends on what you think Nakomi was there to do with Avienda, but
I suppose so.
It's hard. This is a hard theory just because Nakomi in general isn't a constant that you can really compare anything to because nobody knows what she is. I remember watching the Dusty Wheel episode, and that was like one of the ones that I watched full through when it wasn't live. Mm-hmm. And it was because I was waiting for somebody to tell me something that I could just genuinely believe. And even then, with like so much facts, I was still like, we don't know who this bitch is. We don't know.
Absolutely. I mean, I sat and did an episode about Nakomi with Lauren from Unraveling the Pattern after hearing him, I think on the Leaf Brothers show, actually talk about, oh, I think it could be Rand's mother. But then a Dusty Wheel show happened and we both called in about something else. And it was like, that kind of just made us think about things differently. Well, maybe it's not. But there's so many things about Nakomi, which is just like,
yeah, you know, they're just all over the place.
It's just all over the place. It's crazy. And like, if I remember correctly, one scene was obviously written by Jordan and then one scene was written by Brandon. Mm-hmm. I can't remember which is which. I feel like the Avienda scene was Brandon and the Rand scene was Robert Jordan, I think. Don't quote me exactly on that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, so there's always that like, well, what did, you know, Brandon put his own spark on things and stuff like that. So Nakomi is such an open subject and I don't think we'll ever really get the answer. I think that's one of the things where RJ's like, don't tell anybody ever type thing. But I love this idea that, you know, this Wilder, go with the Wilder for a moment. She did teach Cad Swain how to be Cad Swain. Yeah.
She did. And the thing, like, because I think it's, because I read those books so quickly, none of them, I don't think I could actually tell you what happened from one book to the next, except maybe the first book. But I know that like in the books, like when Cad Swain talks about, somebody asks her if she, some situation where she has to explain that she has been humbled before and that she's made mistakes or something. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, revolves around this Wilder. And I mean, for Cad Swain to say that, like this lady's got to be packing some heat. Like,
oh yeah.
There's got to be she's got to be a wild bitch. Like not just a wilder, she's a wild bitch. Like, I mean, if she's going to come in here and do something, because Cad Swain apparently also was already as arrogant as maybe not as arrogant, but she was arrogant already in the tower because she was like stronger than all the Aes Sedai there when she like entered, you know, as an accepted or novice. And so this lady's got to be doing a lot. And also when it comes to like comparing her to Nakomi, she's doing a lot, and to me, it seems like she's doing it in favor of the light. Like, it seems to me, like, at least in Cad Swain's, it's definitely, Norla's definitely doing it for that purpose, or at least not, maybe that's not the purpose, but that's the result.
Yeah.
And then Nakomi, I feel like, also is kind of doing that.
So, yeah. I have a similar sort of outlook on that. So she did, I don't think, Avienda would have gone through the columns a second time and seen the future as opposed to just the past, had she not had that sort of nudge in that thought process introduced to her by Nakomi. And the same way, I mean, Cad Swain is, she's a strong woman automatically. She's one of the most powerful you know, so before Egwene and Nynaeve, she was the, you know, the pole by which everyone else was measured. Yeah. When she became an Aes Sedai, she was automatically top of the food chain because she was stronger than everybody else, and, you know, by their whole way of judging, you know, each other as sisters. So, you know, she had, you know, as you say, a level of arrogance. She was, you know, used to being in charge, all those sorts of things. For, as you say, her to then say, well, I was humbled and, you know, taught a lesson. That is a big thing to admit, even after, you know, after the fact, to be like, okay, so I'm like literally just, well, maybe not literally just, but, you know, I'm kind of like dangling the Dragon Reborn on a string and dangling, you know, Seafolk, and I've got, you know, sisters here and Ashaman there, and I'm guiding this person here, and, you know, just sort of juggling this better phrase, juggling all these things and making it look like a kind of a bit of a breeze, like you know what's going on every step of the way. For her to then be like, well, actually, you know, I wouldn't be this good if not for that situation, basically, it's quite a big thing. And it's going to take a very strong person or a very powerful person in various ways to put Catswain in that position.
Yes, I agree. I mean, that's the thing as well. Like, I feel that Catswain is so kind of intense for so long. And the only time that she starts to feel as though she's starting to be less kind of powerful is when Simarag enters the picture. Mm-hmm. And which is interesting because Simarag to me is like kind of a foil to Catswain in some ways, where she uses fear and of course they, you know, I think this was that Knife of Dreams or was that Gathering Storm?
I feel like Knife of Dreams.
I think it's Knife of Dreams.
That's a section of the wiki I hadn't quite read yet, so perhaps I swing through that section of the wiki right now.
I not know when I wrote the entirety of Cat's.
Oh, but you read this a while. You read that. Wrote this. You know, it's not like you wrote this yesterday. So you know.
Well, I mean, okay. So whenever that's happening, let's see. I think it is Knife of Dreams. Mm-hmm. Anyway, somebody else will correct me, I'm sure. Yeah, it's Knife of Dreams. Where she explains that, like, the thing that she figures out is going to break Simarag is the thing that would break her, which is, like, shame, pretty much. And, rejection and not being cared about, being inconsequential. And so, obviously, like, that just adds on to this. But it's interesting that, like, I don't know, because part of me thinks that would be the worst person to deal with the Dragon Reborn. But then part of me also is like, okay, who else would have pushed him to the absolute brink? Like, nobody. Like, he would have just become harder and harder. If I have to hear, like, when I reread, when I get to the point in the books where he starts to say the whole harder than steel, whatever bullshit, I just hate that. I hate it so much. I just want to smack him around. So that's why, also probably why I like Catswain a little bit, because she does smack him around.
I've just got, like, you being Batman and Rand being, like, Robin, that gif, meme, whatever it is, of just being like, stop being a dickhead, you know? Yeah, I've looked through. It is actually Gathering Storm. Sorry. They capture Simarag in Knife of Dreams towards the end, and then it's Gathering Storm where she gets she figures out how to do her bits and pieces, her shaming. So
I mean, it's the whole thing is that Catswain's a total dick, and you're not expecting her to be the one to kind of be able to push Rand. And I know that a lot of, like, I've seen like a lot of arguments where people think Catswain was redundant to Moraine or not necessary, but part of me, really, most of me, doesn't think that's true, because I feel like Moraine, especially at the end, which might have been because, of course, she knew she was going to be. Did she know she was going to die, or did she just know she was going to go through the doorway?
She knew she would go through the doorways. I don't know if she knew she was going to die or whether she survived or not.
Because, of course, she didn't die. So.
Oh, no, but she did. She did know that she would need rescuing because she wrote the letter for Tom.
Right.
About going with Matt. So, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know if it was because of that, but I think at the end of Moraine's arc, though, Moraine, when it comes to change, I think is one of the characters that is more of a presence and then like an aesthetic of a character than an arced character. If that makes sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
So I don't know. I feel like Rand would have never actually known how much he respected Moraine until he lost Moraine. And the only thing I don't like about the endings of the books when it comes to Rand and Catswain is that it ends kind of with him still not having any affection. He didn't need to love her, but I feel like he should have at least had an understanding of what she did for him.
Yeah.
Because especially once he became Jesus Rand, I expected him to have an understanding of what it was she was trying to do.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he, I don't think he like says specifically, okay, I see what you were trying to do and, you know, yeah. You nearly broke me in the process or something, but thank you. But I feel like there's a subtle nod in a conversation somewhere to like,
yeah, I know what conversation, you know, where he like, she asks if he's going to give her a gift and he's like, nah, bitch. I felt so bad for her. I was like, this lady could not have been more alone.
I feel like it's one of those moments where, so you get that. And the most recent one that pops into my head is when I watch DS9 and it's Quark and Odo, where like these rivals almost, like they're constantly having like a battle or a game of wits against each other and they don't like each other. And by the end of the series, obviously they love each other, but they still won't admit it type thing. Yeah. I feel like, you know, there's a level of respect that forms over that, mm-hmm. that arc of a relationship, albeit yeah. one of being adversaries at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. It's true that he did tell her that he would like her to be there.
Yeah, but I feel like although there was some respect, it was a case of like, I respect what you were trying to do and what you did, still yeah. don't like you, and I still don't want to be friends. Like, thank you, and I'll continue to listen to advice if he had stayed in that position. Obviously, he was expecting to die, but I don't think it would have been a case of like, mm-hmm. you know, hey, let's go for a pint after work type situation, even if it's not buddy. So yeah.
She strikes me as a sober type, but I think.
Hashtag Cad Swain's a teetotal.
She is a teetotal. That is true. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yep. She doesn't take what? Does she take wine? A radio or someone like that, Morgan from Podcast the Dragon, does Cad Swain drink? We need to look at this now.
Oh my god, there's so many ways you can be wrong about this book series. Like, I can't remember if she's had mead or ale.
Yeah, I mean, god, that's got to be a quiz question, isn't it, at some point.
Oh my god. So, it's crazy because at the end of the books, when I had just finished the books, I remember like watching all this stuff and like people would talk and I'd be like, that's wrong. I remember this. I know this. Like, I knew every aspect of everything because it was just so fresh in my mind. And I was so annoyed at people that would be wrong about stuff. And then when I was like putting this together, I was like, oh my God, where did it go? Like, that was an entire month that I've just, like, I now just know like basic outlines of like the Rand wins, kind of.
Yep. Kind of, yeah. It happens. I'm sure I regularly say things where people are like, that's not right.
That's
Which is why I, you know, be like, oh, we wave Canada a bit here. So
I need to commit more to my reread. I'm really good on The Great Hunt and Eye of the World, but Cad Swain's not there either of those books.
So, all right. I will, you'll have to come back and help Alex and I finish off writing Egwene out the series on the next book or something, perhaps. That would be brilliant. I'm thinking about having guests there. That was a total side tangent there for a moment. But let's move on to your second point now.
Open my second cider.
Let's go for it. Open your second cider by all means.
Ignore the popping sound.
I'm going to leave. That's a satisfying sound. What cider? I have to ask.
So it's okay. It's terrible. If I had money, it's a little bit better than Strongbow. It's Thatcher's.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, that's all right. Thatcher's is drier than Strongbow. Strongbow usually goes on the sweeter side of things. Yeah. For casual drinking, I usually buy dark fruits, just Strongbow dark fruits because it's easy, it's cheap.
It's nice for a night out, I find, because I think the thing about cider is that it kind of fills you up. It's not going to get you so drunk, but you can also, you know, you'll be warm. You'll be there.
Exactly. And it doesn't break the bank in the process. So, yeah, it's a good combination.
That's the main thing. Mm-hmm. So, that's what I miss about. Ciders at pubs are weirdly expensive, which is really annoying to me.
Yeah, they are. They're so expensive. They shouldn't be expensive.
I don't get it. But I do love Aspels. Like, I just want a bartender to just... Or like to just draft me an Aspels right now. That's all I want.
Aspels is life.
This is a very British conversation.
This is a very British conversation, and I'm absolutely leaving it in the podcast so all the Americans listening.
Yeah.
And you're American too, aren't you? I was going to quit Cad Swain then, Carolina.
I'm more British than most of my British friends, though, I'll say. I know so much about like the history, especially of London and like of also all these other things and books and such. And so when we're like around London on red buses, like just kind of making our way places, I'll like point at things and be like, oh, that's that. Or somebody will ask me what something is. And for some reason I'll know what it is. Like there's like a random rock somewhere in the city, like near like Hyde Park or something, that I'm like, oh, that was the cornerstone of this. And people are like, why do you know this? what was the purpose? But I just see something when I'm walking and I'm like, well, that looks interesting. I should probably know what that is forever. So
I love that. That is brilliant. I mean, London is a wonderful city. If I could afford to move back, I absolutely would.
If I could afford to live here, that would be great as well.
Yes. So I love that you're getting on the British stuff, but I'm leaving that in the podcast, everyone. Cider is fabulous. You're missing out, all you Americans and other countries, Sweden, Australia.
Our ciders are so sweet.
Trying to think of where the podcast is listened to. I'm thinking back to the, you get the global report. So yeah, all those other countries, you're missing out. You might have cider, but it's not like Aspels on draft from a British pub. There's a thing. Anyway. So, but back to the teetotaler.
Back to the teetotaler. Yes, I love that for Cat's Mane.
Yes, this is. It's such a great analogy for her. But so Cat's Mane got her paralysis net. Am I saying that right?
I think so.
Paralysis net. Which obviously is, I mean, that comes in really handy for her. Fighting Forsaken, rescuing Rand from farm adding, cleansing Tate, ruining Samaraj's disguise, you know, like,
it's
as you say, you know, they're just the big things.
Like, I won't say it's plot armor to the point that I think it's actually, like, a problem. I think, but there's so many, like, there's even some where I feel like she has two, let me check my own research here.
Off my own knowledge, obviously she's got one that's a well. One that will help her, it like points in direction of channeling.
Yes, there's
I can't remember if that's tuned to one or just both.
She's got 10 on this net.
Okay.
Do you want me to tell you what they are?
Okay. Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, a bird that looks like a, I'm not going to tell you the descriptions, a bird. This is an angry eel that, though not very powerful, it does make Cat's Mane as strong as a maelstrom channeler. Double crescent moon, which is, dissipates weaves directed at her, whether it's Sidar or Sidin, and grows cold when somebody nearby is embracing the power, no matter, again, if it's Sidar or Sidin. And then a hummingbird, which is a well, and then an eight-pointed star that can detect if a man is able to channel, even if he's not channeling. And then a bird that looks like a swallow, which can detect even a small amount, if somebody is using Sidar or Sidin, like even in a like 3-mile radius, If held by its chain, it can point to where it's being, where that's happening. And then a 6-pointed star that is like an armor that puts an armor on the wearer that's invisible. And then a sleek fish that enables the wearer to pull someone into a circle, like with guiding the flows all the while, but it's only works if the person is drawn in or is already embracing Sidar or Sidin. And then there's 3 that we don't know the use of, which means that like, she could be doing anything with those 3.
I mean, one of them, you'd have to say one of them already disrupts certain flows of Sidar or Sidin, because that's how she reveals Samaraj, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think one of them is supposed to be like disrupt somebody's weave, but only there's one that's, there's obviously that one that we don't know which of the 3 these unknown ones does it, because the other 7 are something else. So it's one of these 3 does that for Samaraj. So I guess it's 2 that we don't know what they do.
True. No, but sorry, you are right. I'm saying, like, I'm speculating here, saying one of them must do that. But where I'm going with this is now there's every possibility Cad Swain just came across this, you know, Tarangriel set, or collected them individually, you know, who knows. Figuring out may have been accidental. She may be like, they're all Tarangriel. I can tell that somehow. Like, maybe she has a talent like Elaine for realizing they're Tarangriel. Or is it Aviander who realized? No, Aviander figures out meanings. But I mean, perhaps she can sense them, what they mean, and she's collecting them over time. There's every possibility of that. They are wildly specific. Why would you have a Tarangriel that disrupts a mirror of mists?
Exactly what she did, like, because I think this was given to her by Norla, like the this and the Angriels, Tarangriels. I'm so bad at this.
Yeah. So, but as you say, like, she got you know, it suggests that she got this from Norla, and that Mirror of Mist is not a weak. Now, granted, Tarangriel were not made in the Age of the Books; they were made in the previous age. But you know, if she found this and was like, oh, it's a Tron girl, I'll just wear it.
And she doesn't know any, like a lot of them do.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, oh, I'll that's like, oh, I found an Ophrod without realizing what an Ophrod is. I'll just dangle it off me, you know, I'll tie it to me shoulder blades or something. You know, like,
tie it to me shoulder blade.
Yeah. I say random shit. All right.
Perfect. I'm going to say that later today for no reason at all. Tie it to me shoulder blade. No. But like, that's true as well, though, because like these things could be super dangerous. Like, and she doesn't know what they do.
And she could just be carrying, you know, a library on her back.
Yeah,
you know, like the one that's is it like a little model that everyone thinks this is, you know, it's RJ himself type thing, and it's like and it's a library in a little man Tongareel type thing.
Isn't it, for all
we know, one of those things she's dangling is a library. So either she knows and has never revealed that, and I don't see why she would never ever reveal that, because that would just give her more prestige and more power. You know, in a way that she would approve of, I feel.
Yeah.
So it sounds like she's been giving it. And if she's been giving it, if someone has given it to her, like, why would they be, oh, you should probably have this.
Exactly. That's why I think it's a creator sort of, like, the creator was it, back to our theory, wow, well done, brought up full circle.
I tried.
You really tried. I didn't give you it. I was like talking about cider and on me shoulder and what.
Hey, I've got to be the host for a reason, haven't I?
Yeah, so, you know. It's a good thing I'm not. I would be so bad at it.
I feel like if there wasn't a point to this podcast, you and I would just sit here and ramble for like an hour and a half.
I'd be like, are you still recording? I'm going to get another cider. That's how it's going. I'm happy to say that I've almost made it so we've actually gone back on another tangent when you did just bring a full circle. So I'll get back to the point.
Yeah, so.
Oh my God, I have no idea what the point is.
So she got she was given the Tarongriel for a specific reason.
Exactly.
You know, Mirror and Mist do not exist. But if she didn't have that, they would never have revealed Simurgh, you know, and there's every chance that everything would have just gone down the shitter and Rand would have, you know, lost a lot more than that hand.
For sure dead. Like, dead. Like, because she uses it a lot. Like, there's so many instances where she rescues him from farmatting. She uses it to, like, destroy everyone during their cleansing of the taint. She uses it a lot of other times as well that are less important to Rand, but still important to other characters. And she knows what, like, some of them do, of course. But, like, there's two things about this that are kind of concerning about Catswain. One, she knows that there's at least three on there that she didn't know what they did. Because there is in the book, like, the reason we know what these are is because she tells us what they are at some point. And, but she doesn't know what the other three are, and she doesn't, like, give them to anyone to find out what they are. Which,
no.
Like, seems super irresponsible. It seems super Catswain-y, but like when you think about, as we've just discussed, the possibilities for what could be on her head that she's just wearing around like a scrunchie, like it could be anything. Like it could be like
I've just got like a hair scrunchie version of a what's that bracelet? It's like a really fancy charm bracelet. Yeah, Pandora. I've just got like a Pandora version. Other scrunchie going on now in my head for this.
This is exactly what I was hoping for this entire podcast. But I also, I'll be honest with you, before I saw an image of what a paralysis net looked like, I thought it was like a kitchen, like, this is really embarrassing. Because also they do tell you what it is in the books, but I was just like.
I mean, I can beep this out if you want afterwards, you know.
the kitchen maids, where, what are they called? You know, hairnets. I thought she was wearing a hairnet. Like, I just thought she was medieval like timing it. I thought that there was just...
I thought you were going to go like a doily or something. But
honestly,
just
not too far off. Not too far off. So when I saw this image of like a spider on her head, I was like, oh, it's like, okay, never mind. But either way, she's wearing this decorated scrunchie on her head for her entire life. And not a person is being like, do you know what those do? Because she's Catswain, so they're like, she'll smite me down. But I do think it's very indicative of like how cocky she is, while also like this is the part that I understand why people like don't like Catswain. She's really cocky, and she doesn't always get all the information before she does be as cocky as she did.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, there's a certain level of Catswain where it's like, well, 99 times out of 100, I'm right. So I will just sometimes run with it anyway, because I don't know, my gut is good, or I have, you know, my hunches usually work out, or, you know, she has far more successes than failures. And that, you know,
yeah,
that gives anybody a confidence level of saying, I'm usually right, so you should just, let's do it anyway. So
yeah, that's true. Because I feel like if I was 99% of the time right, which I'd say like I'm probably like 25% of the time right, which is not a very good percentage.
It's all right. Your boss won't listen to this podcast.
Yeah. I know
my boss doesn't listen to mine, so I'm safe as well. Don't worry. You know.
I'm a producer. I've been producing like 3 films right now, and producers are supposed to know everything. And I tell you again, 25% right. So like they're like, oh, do we have a location? And I'm like, definitely. Whispers to myself, no.
Like, just don't do it in a stage whisper.
Don't do it, exactly. Luckily, it's over Zoom, so I just turn off everything and scream, nice. And then turn everything back on. But back to this, I guess. Cat's Mane is just, I feel like I also, if I was 99% of the time right, I would be a bit more like, well, I'm right. Because that's a pretty good percentage to be going on. However, you know, she could try, like, I feel like she's maybe just never felt love. Like, that's something I want to know about Cat's Mane, because in order to be this harsh, you have to have never understood what it's like to not be that harsh. Or to be a coping mechanism.
Now I need to look up. I'm going to go to something else. I'm curious. So I did a live stream recently and with Master of the Deck. And we decided to, for Valentine's Day, we were spinning a random wheel of names to just get random matches and see how we could mess around with the story to try and...
Damn, Catswain.
Yeah, and we did not have Catswain on the list. I'm looking at the list right now.
That's so shocking.
Yeah, so it's like, it's just an autumn... I mean, it's not like we don't have people... Yeah, it's not like we don't have people who are older on the list. I mean, we've got... who is it? Sulin, is that the really one of the really older wise ones? Yeah, you know, we've got those people on there, so it's not like it was, oh, let's just have people in their 30s or something. You know, it was like,
didn't she made it?
Soralia, you know, Bear, yeah.
She does have a. That's actually one of the only relationships in the books that Catswain has.
We put 7 Boa on the list, for Christ's sake, you know, like.
How did you not get Catswain on there?
We didn't put Catswain, yeah. So clearly, maybe this is, and no one questioned this. You know, this list was not. There were multiple people involved with naming this list. I had at least 4 or 5 people suggest names. Not once did anyone say Catswain. And I'm sure there's someone listening right now be like, I would have put it. Yeah. So, you know, it's very, very possible that it's kind of like a, now I'm not speaking for anyone here, but that kind of suggests to me that the fandom as a whole just doesn't think about Catswain and romance in the same sentence.
They're probably like, why are they doing an entire hour about this lady? But you know what? She deserves our respect.
She deserves some loving, at least.
That's like, I think this is also, I'm just projecting hardcore. She reminds me of like so many people. And she also reminds me of, I hope my sister never listens to this. She also reminds me so much of my sister.
Excuse me, I'm just going to Google your sister now.
You can. And you actually, if you Google my sister, Georgia, should I say a full name? Georgia Ratcliffe, you will find she is a 3-time world champion in rowing, and she's really intense, and she's amazing. She's one of the best people I've ever met. And she does have a boyfriend, so I want to qualify that before I act like she's never had love. She has a lot of love. I really hope she never listens to this. This is not where I thought this night would go. But either way.
Well, like, are we just setting up like a Wheel of Time Tinder for your sister now? Is that what we're doing?
She's got a great boyfriend who's almost as intense as she is while also not being as crazy. But that's all to the point. That's different. She is great. However, I think that a lot of times people will be like, because of how intense she is, often people will write her off as being only intense.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact she's hilarious, has like the driest humor of all, is also incredibly thoughtful, and like so, like, it's because she's so focused, it means that when she's focused on you, like, you're the world, and it's an amazing feeling. So I feel like when I read Catswain, I was like, this is Georgia, like she's doing what she can.
Yeah, if you think about it, Catswain is super focused on helping Rand, and I mean, she goes through huge sacrifices. All right, she, you know, she does it in a very commanding manner, Mm-hmm. Very much like, come on, you know, don't swear, don't raise your voice, don't yell,
yeah.
You know, give respect, all those sorts of things. Say please yeah. and thank you. But she does that in a very much like, not a please do this, but like, just do it kind
yeah,
of tone.
Exactly. And
she's sacrificing a lot to try and help him. And obviously then to help the world in the process, you know, it's not a totally selfless act. She's not like, oh, someone's suffering, I'll help them for no other game whatsoever. She's like, this guy's supposed to save the world. He's not going to do it in his current state. I know how to do this, thanks to Nakomi. We're just going to accept that fact now. And,
yes.
You know, like...
past the theory, that's true.
Yeah. she commits to that. So, yeah, she deserves some loving.
Yeah.
Nice side tangent there, I like that.
I do. And as well, like, her relationship with Sorrelia, that, I mean, it's like a very small thing, but when they make that pact to make Rand laugh and cry again, is like really wholesome. Like,
very wholesome. Yeah.
You know, like, I feel like we don't really talk about that much, but like that whole interaction was just two old ladies being like, we gotta give this boy some laughter.
Like, yep. Like, and I, for me personally, reading the books, that was the moment where I was like, okay, Catswain's not a black Aja or anything like that, you know?
Exactly, because I mean, first of all, Sorrelia would sniff that shit out real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Second of all, like, I love that when she meets Sorrelia, like, she has, like, even though she's so cocky, she does recognize when other people carry something that's worth respecting. Like,
yes.
She respects Sorrelia, and she also, like, even with, like, Nynaeve later on, she, like, has moments where she's like, maybe this girl is, you know, she doesn't say it in the nicest way, so.
No, but she can see the raw material in Nynaeve to be like,
yeah.
She, you know, if with the right forming, mm-hmm. and the right forging, I suppose, if we're going to use raw materials
yeah.
as a start analogy, you know, she could be someone of incredible caliber. Not suggesting she's not now, but, you know, like, it yeah. could just continue to get greater and greater type thing.
Yeah. And I mean, so. She had the hardest, I'll say it again, Rand was such a dick. Such
yeah.
a dick. We always, I mean, okay.
I love how you put it. What did you put it in the notes? It was like Dick Rand and then Jesus Rand or something.
Oh,
it?
let's find out. What did I say? I had a whole parenthesis. Okay. When she like does the whole thing with Tam, which, well, I'll admit before I say anything else, I realized that moment was not great for Catswain. I think mm-hmm. it was not the best idea to manipulate of somebody with their own parent. However, it's a very effective way.
Like, I mean, yeah, she got the goal. She got the end result that she wanted.
Yeah.
It just went in a very
weird,
roundabout
way. Yeah.
Yeah. Also with moments of extreme danger.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it did get what she wanted in the end. So
yeah.
I mean, if you say the ends justify the means, then yeah, she was great. But
yeah,
you know, she was lucky. She was a fair amount of luck.
There was a fair amount of really, did you know what you were doing? Because mm-hmm. if we think about how close Rand was to just destroying the whole world right before he decided not to.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's when I'm like, okay, well, she got the job done. But at at what cost? Like,
yeah, at an almost extreme cost. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
so,
oh, yeah. Okay, but here's how I describe Catswain having orchestrated the Tam moment, which, though horrible, has to be considered the catalyst to flowers and hair running through fields, Jesus Rand, which I stand by.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah. I like that. It's a good moment.
It's very
and it's a good descriptor. So
Burning Man Rand.
Yeah. I love it. I love that. So yeah, so before we move on to your last fun point, and I'm sure we'll carry on good tangents and all sorts. I'd love to, what do you think the other two, so one of them must disrupt Mirrors of Mist of these last three unknown Tarangara. What the other two might do? Like, she doesn't know,
suggesting
she hasn't used them.
Sorry.
I totally missed what you said there, sorry.
I said one's a red rod. She knows what it does. Let's not pretend. She knows what it does.
I love that. That's brilliant. Yeah. Okay. So last one then.
We figured it out.
Yay.
I mean, what is the shadowed moon? That does seem very promiscuous to me. So
there we go. I mean, there's every possibility, but she hasn't used them in the series because she knows the others because she's used them. So she understands like how they work, or she's figured out which one did it, or, you know, through a process of elimination, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But does she have these last ones because she needs them post last battle?
Oh.
Or she used them during the last battle? Or like, is this how she knew? I don't know. Is there something, because she becomes the Amelyn Seat? That's kind of the expectation. I don't have the white book.
I do actually.
But is it in the big white book? I mean, I know everyone said, oh, she becomes Amelin Seat. I presume it's
written somewhere. You want me to look at the ParalysNet, or what
do the... Just go to the ParalysNet and see if it says anything there. But it says to me that perhaps if she's been given, if we go along the idea that she's been given this ParalysNet to help her become the person she needs to be to help Rand and go through, like, she has so many ones that help, you know, the armor helps at the cleansing of the taint, pointing out that, is it the little bird pointing out for where channelers are so they can direct attacks to, again, protect, things for finding channelers of, you know, different sides of the power. So, like, male channelers, female channelers, dissolving weaves, making her a small Margrel, making her as strong as a man, all those sorts of things. They're all helping her on the journey, allowed her to achieve the things she's achieved. To then get in the position to help Rand. But she hasn't used the last two, if we're buying that she's used the Mirror of Mist ones. So
it doesn't say anything after about her reign as Amarylin, but
okay.
And also, do you say Amarylin or Amarylin?
I had this whole conversation. I didn't specifically have this conversation. This conversation came up when I was talking to Michael Kramer and Kate Redding. Yeah, so, I mean, first off, as Michael points out quite rightly, that reading, everyone says listening to a book is cheating. Reading is cheating because originally books were written so they could be, they could be spoken to others, that, you know, you could, someone would buy the newspaper with the stories in and then sit with, like, dozen, 20, 30 years, whatever, and tell the story. Storytellers, telling of a story as opposed to reading of a story was the original story format. So reading is cheating. Listening is the right way to do it. Anyway, the whole pronunciation thing, it never used to really be a thing until you got audiobooks for a start, because everyone was just used to say what they used to say, and there'd be a general consensus among the fandom if they met in enough numbers, obviously pre-internet.
That's still the same.
and that's kind of still the same, but you'll get people like, no, it's going to be said like that. I've got to say it like that. And at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if I say Amelin Seat and you say Amelin Seat, or I say Sidine and you say Sadin, or anything of that nature. Like, I'm just throwing out random things at this stage. You know, is it Lan or Lord or Lord? You know, oh, who cares? Yeah. At the end of the day, the whole point is that story was written, and then it's a journey, a one-on-one journey between you and the author. And what matters is your experience. And it doesn't matter what someone else says in terms of, like, how they pronounce things, or what they envision in their head, or how it gets put into a movie, or how it gets put into a TV show, or how the music is written. It still never takes away your original journey. So for me, I'd like to say it however the hell you like at the end of the day, because, that doesn't stop my experience that I had reading that story. My experience doesn't stop your experience either. As long as I can understand which character or which city or which item you're referring to, after that, who gives a monkeys?
you cut out real quick. That felt like you actually did, like, beep that out. But
what cut out? Was it who gives a monkeys?
You just paused in such a way that it sounded like it cut out.
Oh. All right, okay.
You are your own
my own beeper. So
well, so about you though. You're great at reading stuff.
I try. It's I've got one coming out. This will be out long after this podcast won't drop until, I was called like 2 or 3 weeks in advance. So I've got something either coming out tonight or tomorrow. It depends where I get my ass into gear and finish it. I just got back another narration from someone. But so what do we think these last two pieces might be doing that might help
in
post last battle?
So I'll tell you what they look like, and maybe we can decipher. So I'll say three, because though one of them is the dissipation of weaves or of a mirror of mist, we don't know which one it is. So a shadowed moon, a leaping fish, and a carp. Which a carp is really gross. So
a carp,
like
isn't that a type of fish as well, isn't it?
Yeah, but like kind of like a catfish, but I think they don't. No, it's not like a catfish.
Okay. I was going to be like, I didn't think a carp was like a catfish, but okay.
It's because I used to go to this lake all the time, and they'd always call catfish carp, even though they're not the same.
Ah.
Oh, wait, they are in the same family, though.
Yes, that sounds right.
Okay, so that's not, I'm not as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah, visually they're different, but the same family sounds
right.
I
think carp don't have the whiskers.
Carp don't have whiskers, that's true. Okay, so one for disrupt. Well,
they don't look
Mirror of Mist was used by the Shadow, but used by the Forsaken, and it wasn't used until Grendel was captured and it was kind of, you know, just bullied out of her, I suppose. It wasn't used by the Side of the Light. I'm going to go with the Shadowed Moon for disrupting Mirrors of Mists, because it was used specifically on Semirag. I don't know how you feel about that.
No, I mean, it does. It feels very mysterious, and also somehow it just hints at like that, which, to be fair, I don't know if the other ones... Actually, the other ones kind of do represent a little bit, like, what...
Yeah, so like the little hummingbird just kind of like turning quickly to point towards...
The six-pointed star being like an armor, which is like a six-pointed star, like a kind of emblem or something that you might wear on a
shield or something. Yeah, that kind of fits. There's loose analogies you can put to them, or at least as you were describing there. I was like, yeah, that kind of fits with, you know, like the whole RJ being the little library man, like an elderly man, or you know, being a repository for books, like, you know, that kind of fits, you know, like a storyteller type situation. Sometimes they don't make any sense, but in this case, you know, generally speaking, I've always got the vibe that there was some kind of thing that fit with their use. So we've got a leaping fish and a carp.
I think, maybe this is probably way too accurate, like too close to the actual thing. But a leaping fish to me feels like either like flying or walking on water, which...
I like the walking on water idea. I had something... Or... So when they're trying to say like, Rand, I can't teach you how to channel. Okay. That's like trying to teach a fish to fly. And then Varian's less like, well, you know, I've always found that to be a bad analogy, because there are actually fish that can fly slightly out of water type thing.
That's very good. That's a good reference.
Perhaps it's some kind of way for a male channeler and a female channeler to kind of visually show the other what they're doing with the power.
Oh, you know what? That sounds actually very like true to the way the other ones work. Like, it feels in line with the way the other ones work, where they're talking, like they kind of involve the use of the power in some way instead of granting. Some of them grant certain, like the armor does, but most of them have to do with showing where side in or side are, or, you know,
Sort of manipulate. Yeah, so you, and this would fit because in a post last battle situation, you've got the Black Tower, you've got the White Tower, they're trying to rebuild. We've got sisters bonding waters, bonding Ashaman bonding sisters. You know, you've got that whole, you've got the Pavara and Andro with the double bond situation. Mm-hmm. Like, and even then they couldn't see each other's weaves.
Yeah.
So perhaps this is like, hey, this is, you know, something that could be used. She could sit down with whoever runs the Black Tower and they could kind of start sharing knowledge, or this is how, like, you know, you do it with Sidi, and this is how you do it with Sidar, and things like that. So, only because of the analogy of I can't teach you, it'd be like teaching a fish to fly type thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, the carp.
Now,
we could be really on the nose and be like, it helps her breathe, like, it gives her like a little pocket of air underwater, or it lets her breathe for 30 seconds.
Kind of reminds me of like Harry Potter, like the gillyweed or something. Sorry.
No, I love that. The bubble head is the bubble head to Rongreal.
That's what it does. We figured it out. I'm okay with that.
I love that. That's brilliant.
And now, right.
I've got so many things I could call this episode. Cat Swain has a bubble head to Rongreal.
Teetotaler Cat Swain.
Yeah.
Well, the wild fish
chain and the bubblehead tongue. Oh wow, that would be.
Oh, hilarious. That's good. That's a good one. I mean, we've come up with some great stuff here. We haven't talked about the theory barely at all, but I think that's because we all agree that it's correct. Which
yes,
I'll yeah, only add one more point to this, which is the main point and the only point, is that Norla's name starts with an N, and so does Nokomi's, meaning they are the same person.
Yep.
Fight me. I'm sold.
I'm in. I love that.
Fight me if you dare.
This is brilliant. So, I mean, I suppose we could round out the end with some of your you've delved into those points a bit in your notes. So we could probably finish off. So you've put, it's similar to the encounter that Avienda had
Yeah, wonder
with
why the
Nekomi.
witness is.
Yeah. Influence the target for a way that would change coming events for the side of the light.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's a lot of similarity there. And it was, as you say, not a lot of information given. So
I think the ambiguity, wow, I'm really trying big words tonight.
And on your second cider as well.
Can you imagine? This meeting I have later is going to go really well, let me tell you.
it's only an hour and a half away from
that
meeting.
You know what? If you schedule a meeting for 9 p.m., you get me at 9 p.m. on a Friday. I don't care if it's COVID. I don't care. That's your own fault.
I'll tell you what. Next time we sit down and do a podcast, it's going to be 9 o'clock on a Friday night, and it's just going to be fucking...
I'm going to already have
this is
going to
be fucking hilarious.
I'm getting answers.
I'll get on the ciders with you. So
yes, I'm gonna have them all open so that we don't have to wait for me to open them. It's they're gonna be gross. Anyways, that's something really, really great to look forward to.
Oh yes, definitely.
Either way, my theory is right by all means. But the ambiguity.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, the ambiguity is really quite difficult. The ambiguity of this is all the proof I need, because I feel like the more ambiguous you make something, the more that we all have to feel like it needs to be the same as something else, because otherwise, why have all these random kind of little, like, I don't know what the word for it is, but there's like, when you write a story, there's something that's it's called when there's like something that isn't so, doesn't have any other plot function.
Oh, right. So there was a little bit of this I did an episode with Shelley a couple of weeks ago. Well, a few weeks ago on Recording Wise, but it came out last week. About the Tinkers, and then diving into it got very serious. And it was more of a discussion about pacifism and Tinkers. Tinkers and Perrin being an orphan surrogate type situation. It got very, very serious and in depth. But I love the discussion, and we're going to do one on nationalism at some point. But one point about it that we, when we talked about Tinkers, what do the Tinkers do in the story except when it comes to Perrin?
Oh.
They have no real influence on the rest of the story. In fact, they basically have no influence. All right, they save children at Emmons Fall, but again, with Perrin.
They were somebody that I always thought would matter a lot at the end. I say always again after having read it an entire month, but I act like I've been in it forever, and I'd be like,
it was 10 months ago, so it's felt like forever, in COVID time. So
I did think when I first read it, like I really thought that they were going to play a huge part in the last battle somehow. I thought that they were going to be some influential aspect to the way that that Rand argued with the Dark One, especially when he was having that long argument with him about, and you see all these different worlds, and it's like, you can't have a world without evil, but you also can't have a world with only evil. Even for the Dark One, that wouldn't be fun. Like, and I really thought that the Tinkers would be like an example of kind of, I don't know, some in-between world where you can't have pacifists, but it...
But I mean, they are just there for Perrin.
They
are. So again, I can't remember what it's called, but it does happen in the story. So, and I really don't know where I was going with that. I was just being like, hey, this is an example of something that only affects one point in the story.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a way bigger one, but it's also one of those, I mean, I think the Ogier almost were that until they decided to bring them way more hardcore in the last three books.
Yeah, I think so.
Which I'm really glad, because I think if they hadn't, I would have felt like it was a lost
opportunity.
Potentially,
I would say.
Exactly.
The thing I love about this is I've never heard anyone discuss Gnawla ever, anywhere. So I just love that instantly right there. I'm just like,
Nobody even knows who Gnawla is.
Done a fucking pod. Oh, that should be the episode name. Who the fuck is Gnawla?
Who the fuck is Gnawla? Who is she?
Oh, that's what we call it. But. So I love that automatically. Like, yes, no one's done a podcast episode of this. Yes, yes, this is amazing. Yes.
Well, I remember leading up to this, I was like thinking of my first theory was that Aiel have red hair because they eat carrots. So we've come a long way, folks.
I bet I could have made a podcast episode out of that.
I mean,
when you first said Cadswain, I was like, yeah, I always had theories that she wasn't bound to the Oves or had different Oves, you know, and obviously there's that time where you think, is she good or is she bad?
God, I can never say the right one. But
ooh, yeah, maybe they free her from the, or allow her to
maybe the carp, that's what the carp does.
Yeah, so maybe that allows her to choose whether to follow the oaths or not.
Like maybe it's like you don't have to when you're wearing it that oaths you know, aren't bound to oaths or something. Yeah, like you
very possible.
Choose. Yeah, I think she was always truthful.
Well, yeah, I don't feel she lied.
Which I think is why
people outright. I think you know she manipulated truth, obviously.
Yeah, not as much as surprisingly, not as much as others. Like,
oh yeah,
because she's so blunt most of the time. You know that she's about to slap you. Like when Rand was like standing there being rude to Caroline Damodred. Hello, my girl. What's up? and I always want to say Dalinar, but that's just because I'm writing Stormlight. But her. What's the guy, Dav, and the steward of Tyr, whatever. His name.
No, brain's gone. Can't remember his name.
Oh, this is now a problem, actually. I just realized I need to know.
Because all I've got is the Stormlight name in my head now as well. I mean, I'm not up to the last book. I'm still listening. I'm doing a reread or a re-listen.
Yeah. For a second there, I thought you meant you hadn't read it full through, and I was like, what are we doing here?
Oh, no, it's literally just the last book.
You know
the
so only one much. For somebody that has it. Can you imagine knowing that much and not having read the books? I feel like that's going to be soon.
Books are really, really good and detailed, so you know.
Yeah, that's true. This is one of those types of books that if an English teacher ever gave you a test on them, you simply have to read them because you could not find, like, even the wikis don't have, like, when I wrote this thing for Cadswain, I was looking at, like, maybe four different wiki sites and also reading her passages, and the wiki sites never had, like, some of the main information about her. So, yeah, that's a whole nother tangent about how much information there is in the Wheel of Time.
Absolutely. So, but I mean, I love this theory because the anonymity of Norla and Nokomi. So we know what Norla like did, I suppose. Whereas we don't know, like as you said at the beginning, they have like opposite lack of information situations. Mm-hmm. You know, so we get like half of one person presented with Cadswain, and then we get like the other half of what in the story is written as a different person, but we're saying is the same person here with Avienda. And I just, you know, that clicks. I mean, that's like a puzzle piece, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I've got 1 to 50 here. I've got 51 to 100 over there. Mm-hmm. Look, I have a century. You know,
exactly. I mean, that as well, because like, I feel like this is one of those things, and I think this especially because of how much Cadswain, I think, is one of the characters, and is also one of the why I wanted to do her wiki, was because when I got the big white book, which mine's actually black, so I'm not sure.
Ooh.
Why it's called a big white book, but I've seen
Nate, I always say it wrong. I did a spoiler they call it spoiler condom, but I did a spoiler warning for the Black Tower podcast, and because I never knew what it was until much later, I always then said it wrong, so I call it the big bad book of white art without thinking half the time. I just that just rolls because that was my head not my head canon, but that was just what it I'd heard it vaguely, and I was like, oh, a big bag of white art, whatever. And so I've said that in the spoiler column without realizing it, and then they've been using it for like a month, and then I listened to it one time and I was like, oh shit, I said that wrong. And then they laugh, they're like, yeah, we heard that, we thought you did that deliberately, we just left it in because it was funny. I was like, well, you know.
Yeah, so, well, there you go, that's the WOT community for you.
Yep, we like to have
fun. Trolls. We're hairy trolls.
Hey, I am a troll. I'm in Lesbian Early server, and I'm actually in that server. My nickname is Malkia's Troll Hunter. So
that feels true. That feels right. So, mm-hmm. But okay, the big white book, I suppose. Mine's black, but I don't know if that's the name of it either. Anyway, in this book, like, she has the most information out of any character in the book, like, that's extra that you wouldn't have found reading the book. And that makes me think that Robert Jordan probably wanted to put more of her in there, but realized that he couldn't because there was already so much going on. And so it makes sense to me that, like, maybe, obviously, they couldn't have done flashbacks. I personally hate flashbacks, but that's actually more about filmmaking than it is about books. But like the Norla experience, or even like if she was going to give us like a rundown of what happened there, which she doesn't, because there's like only one sentence about Norla actually in the books. And I'm not even sure if they say her name in the books. I think it might just be in the white book, but I'm not sure. So don't
go. I don't remember a name in
the books. I think she just calls him a wilder, taught me a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
This part, I think she says that that's when she got her paralysis net, but I'm not even sure about that. So much of it actually isn't even in the books that, like, I'm making this theory off of.
Well, no. She got it then. Like, we're just going to say that. But the Wilder thing just made me, you know, again, another sort of link here to Nakomi.
Mm-hmm.
We think Nakomi channels in some way. There's lots of speculation on how she creates, you know, the meal and stuff with, you know, the few supplies that she has and Avienda has, and it sort of appears and disappears and all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's some sort of, like, she must be, there's a power use there.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the character that Nawla that teaches Cadswain,
mm-hmm,
is a Wilder.
Yeah.
You know, so why would a fully trained, you know, I'm proficient, I'm the top dog, you know, I'm usually right, so I act like I'm always right, mm-hmm, Aes Sedai, going to take a lesson from a Wilder?
Exactly. You know? And why was she in the Black Hills? Mm-hmm. There's so much I want to know. What was Cat? Yep. She going on a hike? Was she feeling breezy? Did she think, this is my time? Time for a hike? Like, what?
What's up that mountain? Let's just go for fun.
I know that she, like, she's, in so many ways, she feels like she's a Red Aja, but then, especially once you get towards the end of the book, you can totally feel the green that is who she is.
Mm.
But I do, there's so much about, like, why, like, was it because, I mean, obviously because she has these Turang Grails, it's so much easier for her to be, like, somebody that hunts men that can channel, but at the same time, I'm like, where does the motivation come from?
Yes.
Part of me is like, did she always know that she was going to be going after the Dragon Reborn? Because she's looking for all these men all the time. It feels like she had a reason.
I mean, what better reason to give no more information than a Wilder once taught me a lesson?
Exactly.
Then for that said Wilder to actually be a case of, right, I'm going to sit you down because you're the only one who's going in with the strength, of power and character to actually fulfill this duty and make it through and be in the position to help the Dragon Reborn. So here's the deal. Mm-hmm. This is like, you know, this A needs to happen, so B can happen, so C can happen, so D, you know, and here's what you're going to need. Some of it I won't tell you about because it'll just do its job when it's needed, and some of it I will tell you about,
mm-hmm,
and off you go. And I'm going to give you enough information to, you know, to put you on the path of chasing men who can channel,
mm-hmm,
because I know you're the type of person who's going to find that exciting, but not so much information that you know the end of everything, because as is true to, you know, time travel type situations, if we tell you everything, it doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. And like, if they are going to do, if somebody is going to tell her to do that first, if it's just like a random occurrence, why pick Cadswain? So like, they have to know enough, mm-hmm, you know, like they have to know she's incredibly powerful, which I guess maybe they probably know that because they're Wilder, they probably can tell. But like, they're, first of all, how is she just randomly running into her in the woods? It feels very Nakomi-ish to be running into anyone in the woods. And then also, like, then to give her all this very specific information and tools to do what needed to be done. It, like, you had to have some sort of divine providence. Like, you had to know something. Like, why would you just give this to some lady? Like,
yeah.
Like, first of all, keep it for yourself. Like,
well, yeah, she can channel, so
keep it,
yeah. Valid.
Wilder is Nynaeve, that's the end.
Yes.
Is also Nakomi, Nynaeve is Norla. All the proof I need, their name starts with N.
N, okay, so now someone's going to be listening to this, be like, right, I'm fucking Googling characters with names, meaning with N and Wheel of Time now, and I'm going to be like, what about all these other characters?
Yeah.
But I love this. I'm behind you. Norla is Nakomi. I think we've cracked it. I'm going to send this to Brandon Sanderson. I'm
going
to send it to Harriet. I know that you listen, both of you. Obviously, you've got nothing better to do with your time.
Obviously.
So, yeah. But I love
it's
that.
The
I
truth.
Love
that idea. The cold hard truth.
Do you have any last points you want to bring up about Cadswain, or shall we put a little bow in this?
Don't come for me. That's all I have to say.
All right. If you want to at Carolina, you will not be able to, because I'm going to hide her information.
Don't you dare.
Better than Norla in the podcast show notes. So
That's all I have.
Love it. Cool. Well, thank you everyone for listening, wherever you are, to the Malkit Talks podcast. I would love to hear your feedback about today's crazy episode or any episode we've done for that matter. So please feel free to reach out to me via email, malkittalks@gmail.com. You can join my Discord server, or you can find me on Twitter if you like Wheel of Time-based dad jokes that I have put some ham jokes. If you enjoy a bit of Wheel of Time cooking or narrations, Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, which is also called Melkit Talks. And if you want to support my content so I can continue to create, please consider joining my Patreon family. As you heard earlier today, Dan from Leafcast has joined. There's many levels and lots of different benefits you can get. And all, of course, you will get my love, even if you don't support and you're just listening because I love you. I do this because I enjoy doing it and I love hearing that people enjoy listening to it. So, but yeah, everything, all the contributions will go towards improving the channel, better equipment, better software, all those sorts of bits and pieces. Thank you so much for this episode, Caroline. I've loved it. It's been hilarious.
Thank you. Honestly, I don't know why you dealt with me, but I appreciate it.
No, as I said, next time it's going to be a 9 p.m. episode. We're going to be cracking out the ciders.
Yes.
And yes, it's going to be crazy. And we will talk about the Aiel having red hair because they eat a lot of carrots.
Yes, so. The best theory that has come to this or any channel.
Yes, indeed. And until next time, everybody, may you always find water and shade.